You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
It's almost 12 months since we made our first podcast reporting on the virus that scientists refute was a novel coronavirus called SARS-CoV-2, causing a disease that the World Health Organization called COVID-19. If you've followed our podcast since then, you might remember we started talking about potential vaccines back in March of 2020 and the enormous challenge for scientists and researchers around the world. Here we are in the first weeks of 2021, and some things have changed, but some have not. In mainland China, there are new lockdowns. It's not the city of Wuhan anymore, but the cities of Hebei province, neighboring Beijing, affecting tens of millions of people. Here in Hong Kong, we are again working from home. The schools are again closed, and we are still wearing our masks outside. For much of last year, we hoped a vaccine could be found. There are now 8 different vaccines in limited use. There are 20 vaccines in phase 3 trials. And as I speak to you now, in the middle of January 2021, more than 32 million people in 45 countries have received vaccinations. And that number is growing by the day, by the minute. Instead of hoping for a vaccine, the discussion now is about who is getting the vaccine first, how are we getting the vaccine to them, and beyond that, a much bigger debate. Which vaccine do you prefer? Which vaccine do you trust? Welcome back to the Inside China podcast. My name is Kinling Lo. In this episode, we are going to talk about the vaccines that have been developed in mainland China, what makes them different, and how they are being tested in different countries, and also how some of them are being rolled out across Southeast Asia, Africa, South America, and some countries in Europe. Over the past year, we've learned about the three-stage testing process for vaccines, and how the third stage is all about a word we are now very familiar with, efficacy, meaning the ability to produce an intended result. And as we have heard over the past days, there are reports from Brazil that the vaccine called CoronaVac, developed by the Chinese company Sinovac, has been tested and declared to have an efficacy of just over 50%. Previous trials of the same vaccine in other countries produced much higher numbers, and both Turkey and Indonesia have already given a go-ahead for it to be used on the general public, months after the Chinese government approved it for emergency use. In September last year, the CEO of Sinovac announced plans to roll out this vaccine worldwide in 2021, including the United States. So, what do we make of these reports from Brazil? And what about the other vaccines being made by China? Let's hear from a regular guest to the Inside China podcast. Josephine Ma is one of our editors on the China desk at the South China Morning Post, and you've heard her leading our coverage of COVID-19 vaccines for the past year. Let's start with the headline news and work our way back. Why is the story from Brazil about the Sinovac vaccine having just over 50% efficacy such a big news story?
Yeah, you're right. It is a big story. I think it's big because, number one, a lot of countries have placed order to buy this vaccine, and they are closely watching how effective it is. That's number one. And there are also like high expectations about whether this vaccine can fill the supply gap for developing countries. That's one reason that this number is so important. Number two, it came kind of like as a surprise, because just last week, the Brazilian partner of Sinovac announced that the efficacy rate of this vaccine was 78%. And it was saying, oh, the finding shows that the vaccine was fantastic. And just in a week time, it suddenly announced that the efficacy rate is 50%. That's just barely past the minimum requirement for a lot of regulators. And also because, like, for example, like WHO and also China said they prefer the vaccine to have 70% in efficacy rate. So this is it came as a surprise to many, partly to do with the expectations about the efficacy of the vaccine.
What happened in between? There was this 70-something percent efficacy and suddenly it dropped to 50%. Why was there such a difference?
Yeah, it's a question a lot of people are asking. So it's to do with how they calculate the efficacy rate. So 78% refers to how well the vaccine protects people from developing COVID-19 with symptoms that require treatments, because Butantan didn't reveal a lot of details last week. So it was under a lot of pressure from Brazilian scientists. That's why they have to hold another press conference. The size of the trial in Brazil is significant because it involved 13,000 people. So comparing to the trial size in Indonesia and also Turkey is a lot larger. Usually it requires around 30,000 people for trial 3. That's the late stage trial for efficacy and also like safety. And Brazil kind of like take up half of it.
I understand Sinovac vaccines were in phase 3 trials in a lot of other places, for example, in Turkey and Indonesia on top of Brazil. And Turkey and Indonesia seems to be going to vaccinate the people very soon. So were the results there much difference?
That's a good question, and it's where all these confusions come from. Each trial site are releasing like a partial picture of the trials, and the company hasn't given an overall efficacy rate. So Turkey said earlier that its efficacy rate was 91%. It looks very good, but it's based on like a very small number. They have enrolled 7,000 people, but this 91% is based on the finding from 1,300 people. So that's only a small portion of the whole trial. And it's an interim result. We don't know the details yet, like the number of infections in each arm and what it is like when they have findings of the entire 7,000 people in the entire trial, I mean. And Indonesia, it released its interim result as well, and it says the efficacy rate is 65%, but still the trial size of Indonesia is pretty small. It's also 1,000 plus people.
Joe, we've also heard much about the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, and you've previously explained to us how they're both mRNA-type vaccines. Can you recap for us how they're different from the CoronaVac vaccine that we've been talking about?
Sure. They are using different technologies. CoronaVac, as well as two other Chinese vaccines developed by Sinopharm, they are using a very traditional technology. We call them inactivated vaccines. So basically, they just grow the virus and inactivate or kill them to use them to induce immune response from human beings. So this is an old technology that's been used for many, many decades. A lot of vaccines like polio and others use this technology. So mRNA vaccine, before COVID-19, there was no human mRNA vaccine, even though the idea was there for some time, the concept was there for some time. So it's the first successful human mRNA vaccines.
When we were talking about the CoronaVac vaccines being tested in Turkey, Indonesia, and also Brazil right now, the big issue here appears to be the refusal to publicly release the data from these trials. Have you found or heard anything particular behind all these differences in the release of information?
Well, what we can tell is that the company didn't say anything about the data until yesterday. So we have like these partners of Sinovac, like the Indonesian partner, the Turkey and Brazilian partners. They came out and they gave like a partial picture of what's going on. And there's no announcement from the company until yesterday. So that kind of like caused concerns. And yesterday, the chairman of the company came out and he kind of like repeated all these figures from different trial sites. And of course, he highlighted how the vaccine is 100% effective in preventing severe case. And so he highlighted these. The problem is they haven't released a lot of details about the trials. Usually there should be like a scientific paper on a scientific journal after the press release. And we don't know when they are going to publish one, but that's very important. That's an important step that you can't skip if you want people to trust in, to have confidence in your vaccine. And these articles have to be peer reviewed, of course. Why didn't they tell people about the 50.4% earlier? That raised a lot of concerns. It doesn't help the image or it doesn't help to build trust in the vaccines. That's the same for Sinopharm vaccine. The government said the efficacy rate was 78%. So they made that announcement late December. And there were even fewer details. We don't even know the number of infections in each. That means those who received the placebo and those who received the vaccines. I mean, for the public, they may only want like a big figure, a summary. But for others, they will have to look at how robust these figures are statistically, whether statistically they are significant. So that's why these kind of like figures, the details are very important for scientists and for those who really want to know about the vaccines.
Joe, you mentioned Sinopharm, which is another company from China which produces two other vaccines, one in conjunction with the Beijing Institute of Biological Products and the other one with the Wuhan Institute of Biological Products. Now, what do we know about them?
The government, I mean, as I just mentioned, announced that the vaccine developed by Sinopharm and Beijing Institute of Biological Products has an efficacy rate of 78%. As I said, we don't know the details of the data, but this vaccine has been rolled out in many Middle East countries. And then there's another vaccine developed by Sinopharm and Wuhan Institute of Biological Products. The interesting thing is the trial of these two products are held together. They are held and operated by the same institute in UAE, Bahrain, but only the Beijing one, only the data of the Beijing one was released. We don't know what happened to the Wuhan one. That's something intriguing. We don't know whether the data is ready or not, but the trials were held at the same time, in the same place. So that's interesting.
And on top of that, there was also another Chinese vaccine company called CanSino, is that right? And it was June last year that the Chinese government said they had the People's Liberation Army, which is China's military, to have been vaccinated by the vaccines produced by CanSino. Do we know any updates or data from then?
Not really. We haven't heard much about CanSino. What I heard from earlier was that the data for the late stage trial won't be ready until the first or second quarter of this year. If we look at the data from the earlier stages, like the stage one and stage two of the trials, the immune response triggered by this vaccine is less robust when you compare it with Sinovac and also Sinopharm vaccines. So we don't know how well it's doing in trial three. It's still being tested in several places like Pakistan, Russia, Mexico, but we won't know the result yet. The emergency use permission given to PLA, that lasts for a year. We don't know whether the PRA will renew that permission of use later this year. That's something we don't know, but probably we will have to wait for more data from the trials.
To come back a little bit on this, the vaccine from CanSino was an adenovirus vaccine. And there was this newly announced vaccine from the American company Johnson & Johnson, which was also an adenovirus-based vaccine. Is that right?
Yes.
And how does it work? And should we have high hopes for this vaccine from Johnson & Johnson?
Cansino vaccine and also Johnson & Johnson and Oxford vaccine, they are all vectored vaccines using different types of adenovirus. Adenovirus is a common type of flu virus. I refer to the adenovirus type 5 that's been used by CanSino and also used by the Russian vaccine. So this is a common flu vaccine, and they use this adenovirus as a vector, and they kind of camouflage it in order to trigger immune response from human beings. The problem with adenovirus type 5 vaccine is that since it's so common among human beings, a lot of people may already have pre-existing immunity against it. So that will affect the effectiveness of the vaccine. That's why Oxford and Johnson & Johnson, they use other types of adenovirus vaccine that was not found in human beings before. For example, the Oxford vaccines used a adenovirus found in chimpanzee. They chose these adenovirus in order to avoid what we call the pre-existing immunity. How important is Johnson & Johnson? Yes, I think it's important because, like the Oxford vaccine, it takes up a lot of portfolio for COVAX. That's the mechanism led by WHO for equal distribution of vaccine to help the access of vaccines for developing countries. The result from Johnson & Johnson will be announced in 2 weeks. That's what a lot of reports are saying. But there are also reports saying that the production capacity may be lagging. So we'll have to see. Of course, we'll have to wait till the data comes out before we can judge how effective the vaccine is.
And so far, we know that there is one more vaccine that has just went into phase 3 trials, and the trials are being held in Uzbekistan. Can you tell us about this Anhui Zhifei Longcome Biopharmaceutical Company? What have they been developing?
So it's the fifth Chinese candidate entering the final stage of clinical trials. It's using a different technology. It's what we call the protein subunit vaccine. That's, for example, like in the West, you have Novavax, Sanofi, GSK. They're also developing this type of vaccine. The company announced earlier in December that they have started the late stage trial, and they plan to recruit 29,000 people from China, Uzbekistan, Indonesia, Pakistan, and Ecuador. The trial in China has started. We don't know how well, what was the progress like in the enrollment of volunteers for other trial sites. It's definitely something to watch, because protein vaccines are known to be like stable, and it's established technology. We have other types of vaccines like flu and hepatitis vaccines using this technology. It's difficult to make, but it's kind of like candidate to watch. But we don't know too much about this yet. The company said the findings from the first two stages of trials show that it's safe and it trigger immune response. But as you can see from like other vaccines, whether the neutralizing antibodies triggered by a vaccine can really protect someone from contracting the disease or developing symptoms, hard to say. I mean, you have to wait till the last stage of clinical trials. And I want to add one note that for all these vaccine trials, they can only tell us how well the vaccines are in protecting people from developing symptomatic infections. And we have little information about how well they are in protecting people from having asymptomatic infections. That means we don't know how well they are in reducing the transmissions.
Joe, that was a really important point that you made, that as of now, we only know that these available vaccines seem to only be able to prevent from people from getting really sick, but we don't know how protective they are stopping the transmission of COVID-19. Joe has actually been working really long hours on the latest and the developments about vaccines, and she has just published a really precise Q&A on scmp.com. So do go search for her articles. We'll surely get back to Joe about all the latest on vaccine development. Thank you so much for being here with us.
You're welcome.
Another of our lead reporters covering the issues related to vaccines is Simone McCarthy.
Hi, Kenling. How are you?
I'm good. Simone, when we spoke to you last year about China's vaccines, you told us about this announcement from Beijing that any vaccines China developed would be declared a global public good. Can you just recap for us, what is a global public good?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, the million yuan question, I think, because China has repeatedly said this, that the Chinese vaccines will be made a global public good. It was first said by President Xi back in May when he was speaking to the World Health Assembly, the WHO's governing body, pledged to make China's vaccines a global public good. And there's been a lot of talk about how these vaccines can be rolled out and how they can become available to the world. And WHO has its massive COVAX facility, which we've talked about on this podcast before, about how to get vaccines to people around the world. And China has pledged to be a part of that. They've given a few different indications of what that might actually look like. They've said that, first off, is that their companies will supply vaccines at a fair and reasonable price. And then they've also said that they're up for other things like donations or unpaid assistance. They've also offered, earlier this fall, I think we've talked about this before too, they offered around $1 billion in loans to Latin American countries to buy vaccines. So I guess it's sort of, we could see it as maybe there's many different heads to what this global public good might actually mean, but we read it as China's promise to help other countries also have access to vaccines.
And is China alone on this? I mean, there are other vaccines from other countries like the AstraZeneca, Moderna, and the Oxford vaccines. Are there any plans for those to be declared as global public goods as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of like we can all say what we want, but you have to put the doses where your mouth is kind of thing. And so we've certainly seen that, I mean, there's huge manufacturing deals that are coming from, like the Serum Institute of India has partnerships with Novavax and AstraZeneca to produce hundreds of millions of doses. The AstraZeneca deal with Serum Institute of India is specifically pegged for lower and middle income countries to have access to those doses. So we have some major players in vaccine production who are certainly involved in this too. And that's also a really essential part of what the WHO is trying to do with its COVAX facility, where it's brokering different deals with these vaccine developers in order to be able to get supplies from them and then equitably distribute those around the world. And so I guess we could say that those are certainly too a global public good.
We saw in some recent global headlines that there are rollout of vaccines in the United States and the United Kingdom. But can you bring us up to date with the rollout of Chinese vaccines worldwide? Where are they being distributed?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we've just had some sort of like a roller coaster ride with the Sinovac vaccine, which I think Joe just took you guys through. Basically, a number of countries have expressed interest in accessing Chinese vaccines or have already begun to receive shipments of them or even started vaccinating their citizens with these vaccines. I think one of the things that we're seeing is that governments that aren't the richest in the world are scrambling to figure out how they're going to get enough doses for their people. How are they going to protect their populations from COVID-19? And so China has presented itself as a player that can step in and help. And so we've got hundreds of millions of doses of Chinese vaccines that have been, that countries have either, you know, have solid deals for or intentions to purchase. And so China can be poised to really play a large role in that. So just to give you a sense, this is totally worldwide. I mean, Sinovac, there's Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, Turkey, Brazil, Chile. These are some of the countries that have deals for these vaccines. We saw the Indonesian president on Wednesday actually getting a dose of the Sinovac vaccine. And also Ukraine as well in Europe, which we may not necessarily expect that there will be huge rollout of Chinese vaccines in Europe. Well, one reason being that they already have a number of their own homegrown developers in Europe. One thing that I should point out is that countries really have been lining up for the Sinovac vaccine, and there's over 350 million doses that are already tied up in deals or intentions to purchase with various countries. But the data that just came out, which sort of revised down the efficacy reading for that vaccine, may have some countries calling into question those orders. I think there was already a comment from a Malaysian official saying that if they're not satisfied with the efficacy, the deal won't go through. And at least one Philippines lawmaker has called for the Philippines to cancel the 25 million doses that it has ordered from Sinovac, because really these countries are trying to get to herd immunity, and that requires maybe 60, 70, 80, 90% of the population being vaccinated, depending on who you talk to. So the higher the efficacy of the vaccine, obviously the easier it is to attain that protection among the community. So that may be a little bit disappointing for some of the countries that were relying on this vaccine, even though it still does rise above that WHO minimum threshold for efficacy. And then on the other hand, we have the candidate from Sinopharm, which is the only vaccine which has been approved in China so far for, you know, given a conditional market authorization. And so that vaccine, it's Morocco, Egypt, UAE, Bahrain, Peru, Pakistan, Indonesia. These are some of the countries that are accessing or already have those doses. A couple of those have actually already approved that vaccine. So we really are seeing that it's kind of a global laundry list of countries, and experts and observers and critics, whatever you may want to call them, have also pointed out that some of these deals that Chinese companies are making may also be with countries where China has certain strategic interests, where maybe the vaccine can also be used to support China's diplomatic goals as well.
I mean, like you said, that was a long list of countries, and I'm sure there are still countries signing up to get Chinese vaccines. So what about China's domestic needs? How are they going to balance the needs of their own people and exporting vaccines overseas?
You've probably asked a question that is on the mind of the company leaders for China's vaccine makers. It is really a tricky balancing act. That's kind of a phrase that a number of experts that I've spoken with about this issue have used. I think you're absolutely right. China is now placing cities under lockdown, outbreaks in Hebei and Heilongjiang. And I think that, and they've already said that they're already well into a mass rollout of vaccines. They've administered 9 million doses and gearing up to vaccinate some 50 million before the new year. But at the same time, China's CDC had earlier said that they're not going to need to vaccinate everybody all at once. Certainly what they're doing now is a tiered plan. Essentially what they've said is that they have a sense of what supplies they're going to send overseas, and while taking into account domestic supply needs. We haven't gotten a figure for exactly what China's production capacity is recently, but I think just cobbling together some of the recent statements from the companies that are, you know, from Sinovac and Sinopharm, which have the most advanced vaccines as far as development in the development pipeline. So we don't actually have an updated production figure for China's capacity for 2021. But cobbling together some of the recent announcements from Sinopharm and Sinovac, which are the two vaccines that are the most advanced in their development out of those being developed in China, I think that they're saying almost 2 billion doses may be manufactured in China this year. But I mean, that's of course saying that they reach their target, which vaccine production is incredibly complicated. And I think we're going to see delays with countries around the world this year.
Simone, you mentioned that some of China's vaccine distribution could be related to its strategic interest. Given China's increasing investment interest in African countries, I'm wondering, how is this vaccine diplomacy playing out there?
Yeah, Africa is a really interesting case. And you remind me of one thing that I didn't mention before, which is that another way that China can play a role in vaccine access is by letting local manufacturers produce its vaccine. And we already see arrangements like that in Indonesia and Brazil. But I also think that that's going to factor into Africa. There's talk of production facilities for the Sinopharm vaccine being set up in Morocco and Egypt, and those would produce vaccines that could be distributed throughout Africa. China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, last week was on a diplomatic visit on the continent, and he said that vaccines were among the top three priorities for Africa-China relations in 2021. I mean, Xi Jinping directly said in June that African countries would receive priority for Chinese vaccines, priority access for those vaccines. So there's been a lot of promises. I think the question is just how quickly does that all roll out? Chinese vaccines, unlike the Pfizer vaccine, don't need to be stored in this kind of ultra cold chain environment. You can just pop them in a regular kind of refrigerator type freezer, and they will and transport them and store them. And so the Chinese vaccines aren't alone in that. AstraZeneca is also of the same mold, and that vaccine has already been approved in India, UK. But that will make it easier for distribution in developing countries that may not have the kind of infrastructure that could support a vaccine that really needs to be kept at these very cold temperatures.
So Simone, we've just pulled you into this recording when you've just finished a really important story. Can you tell us what you're working on?
Yeah, there was just some breaking news. This morning we saw the WHO team of experts land in China. This is the mission to investigate the origins of COVID-19. And so this mission has been months in the making, and we were very excited to see the scientists land on the ground today. But then this afternoon, we found out that two of the scientists were not allowed to leave Singapore, where the group had been flying from, because they didn't meet an antibody testing requirement set out by the Chinese government for overseas travelers. So we're trying to follow up on that, and hopefully that will become more clear in the coming hours and days how that may affect the mission as it goes forward.
Thank you, Simone, for speaking to us, and we look forward to reading more of your stories.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
That's all we have for you this week from Inside China. My name is Kinling Lo. As always, go to scmp.com for our latest news updates and 24-hour coverage on vaccine development around the world. In a few weeks' time, it will be the Lunar New Year, the year of the ox. But it will also mean that hundreds of millions of people across China will want to travel to see their families. But this pandemic is far from over. It's almost 1 year exactly from our first podcast talking about coronavirus. Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you for sharing us on whatever social media you're using. And as always, thank you for wearing your mask. Thank you for washing your hands. And as we say it in Hong Kong, 顶住, 没放弃, don't give up.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.